The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets cruising into the end of the year. Tax bill passes and it's ready to go. How to spot a bubble. And our guest, and in fact, the last guest of this year, 2017, is Ben Hunt, Chief Investment Strategist at Salient. All this and much more on episode number 540 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Happy holidays and a Merry Christmas to everyone out there. Thank you for such a great year and your continued support for the show. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host for the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Again, it's been a really wonderful year with just so many things to discuss, learn about, and profit on. It's been just one of those years. And we have a lot to talk about. And I want to mention also that we have a new way for you to review the show. You tell me what you think. Tell me any ideas that you have. Give me a basic review of what you think is going on here and what you think of the show, our guests, et cetera. What I'd like you to do is go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and you can click on the podcast link, the drop down on the top there, and drop it down to where it says submit a review and submit that review and give me some information and feedback. And we'll put that on the site as well. I really appreciate that. It really is important because I need to understand a lot more about what you're looking for, what you think is working, what's not. Because again, this is a show not only that we're just speaking, but it's interactive. Want to know about what the listeners want to hear about because it's obviously a two-way street here. So please do me a favor and do that before the end of the year if possible over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. That would be really very, very helpful. Now let's talk for a moment about what's going on with regard to markets. We saw that over the last three or four weeks, the seasonal trends that we had thought about are playing out pretty well. As expected, low volatility, markets are holding on, gains are being maintained. And obviously on a normal year where you have just, we'll call it average returns, you see this kind of action. But especially on a year where we've had abnormal returns, very, very high levels of returns on indices, on markets, on stocks, you know, people are holding on to their gains, not really selling. Now, I'm not sure what that means for next year, and especially that we have this new tax bill here with some issues related to what the tax rates will be for various individuals. Not quite sure how that's going to play out yet. But again, it is pretty much the standard of what we've seen in the past, that you have this kind of level of reduced volatility and just getting towards the gate. Simply moving into the end of the year and holding on to those gains without much volatility going on. Seasonality. Now, we also saw some economics this week. We saw the third revision of the GDP, and that came in at 3.2%, slightly lower than the 3.3% that was expected, but not. I don't think there's any worry there. Some noisy numbers and a little bit of a change. Each revision comes in a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but 3.2% is still a very respectable number when it comes to GDP for the U.S. Initial claims came in higher, but again, there was some noise there, and we have probably some seasonality that's involved there, so I really wouldn't pay too much attention to that. As we were seeing that manufacturing is still strong, housing numbers continue to surge. In fact, we saw some of the best numbers on existing and new home sales that we've seen in decades. That's good. It's a big part of the economy right there, the whole home builder and repair, renovation, and everything involved with homes is a very, very important part of the economy. And that's why when it crashed back in 2000, we'll call it 6 through 9, in that time frame, everything fell apart because homes are an important area when it comes to the overall economy. So just remember that. I think it's something important. Now, before we get to our guest, I did want to talk about, there's been so much conversation, discussion about cryptocurrencies. I'm sure you're probably aware of it too. You've heard it from places you've never thought you'd heard it hear it from. You see it on the media. You know, there's advertisements and promises made about all sorts of money to be made. And I was thinking about, well, how do you spot a bubble? Not saying this necessarily is a bubble, but it has a lot of the characteristics. Many of the components of what's going on right now have many of the components. And how do you kind of spot this situation? Don't forget, on Friday of last week, we saw Thursday night through Friday, major move. I mean, Bitcoin and Ethereum and Litecoin and Bitcoin Cash and all the old, I mean, they crashed. It came down 30, 40, 50% overnight. That's not normal. Now, there's a lot of opportunities when you see this kind of euphoria. There's a lot of opportunities when you see this kind of distress. When you see that there is people just buying it because, well, I was told to buy it, or people just selling it because, oh my God, I'm scared, I'm going to lose everything. There's opportunities on both sides, right? You have the fear and the greed trade. Very standard when it comes to any market asset or security. But how do you spot a bubble? I was thinking about this. And what are some of the things we could look at in terms of what's happening with this? Because I think it's a good way, a way to really look at this as a learning tool. Now, whether you're going to say, well, this is not a bubble, it's not the point. But let's look at some of the components of it and what's happening here of a traditional bubble. And we're going to talk about this towards the back end, because bubbles don't form until the end. Then they pop. And when they pop, it's ugly. But one of the first things we could think about when there is a euphoric condition, if you don't like the word bubble, a euphoric condition, you see a massive rise in a price of an asset, or maybe even an asset class for that matter, a parabolic move that brings in the interest and perks the interest of a lot of people saying, ooh, what is that? How do I make money on that? At first, there's a lot of denial. Oh, no, it's going to, whatever goes up can come down. But as that move continues for some time, and as there is longevity in that, a lot more people become interested. Now, as that happens, and as we go through this dramatic move and this interest, all of a sudden you see that the media starts picking up on this. That's a, you know, sort of towards the latter part where there's a lot of, again, denial and simply just saying, no, we're not going to deal with this. But all of a sudden, media starts picking up on it and talking about it quite often. Now, the media then brings in the experts and talks about it. And then they get into that never-ending loop process about it. You know, talking about it a little bit, then they start talking about it more. And then almost in every breath and every discussion, everything that you see on the media, it becomes a never-ending loop. And because people rely on media to find out what's going on out there, what ends up happening is it starts to get absorbed, right? We start to absorb what they're talking about. Now you're going to find experts out there. The next thing is there's going to be plenty of experts that are going to promise all sorts of riches and claims to their followers. And these days you see it on YouTube and the videos and podcasts and blogs. And many experts are pumping and they're starting to talk about, well, you know what, we know the ways to do this and just pay us this or that. And what's going to happen is that you're going to get involved in it and make all this money. And they all these different promises. Now, talk starts to circulate and everybody's curious is the next stage. Cocktail parties become mini seminars. I've seen this 100 times. The topic is just talked about by all sorts of people in all sorts of places. And people who you never thought would have talked about it or had interest in something like this become bubble zombies. All they can talk about is that's the only conversation you have. Oh, what is this doing? And did you buy any of that? Prices continue to move higher and then retail jumps in big as now they're afraid of missing out. This FOMO sets in pretty hard. And everybody starts to believe it. It's going to the moon. This is the best thing in the world. You can make billions of dollars. You'll retire on what you're going to make here. The media then doubles down. People are now starting to borrow money, maybe using their credit cards or borrow money from their house, borrow money from friends, borrow money from their 401ks, and they're placing bets on the asset. I use the word bets because that's really what it has become. And you can see the talk brewing from people that you wouldn't expect, like your landscaper, your dry cleaner, your delivery guys. Everybody has an opinion. I talk about the story where recently I was at a restaurant. I walked outside the restaurant and I was getting my car from the valet, from valet parking. And I noticed all three of the people that were standing there, the valet parking people were standing there and they were on their phones doing something. Said, hey, what you guys doing? What you looking at? We're talking. Oh, we're checking out the price of all these coins. We're trading them. I'm like, wait a minute, you're standing here parking cars and trading coins at the same time? Yeah. It becomes a worldwide obsession. Now, still we're not really at the point of where you're concerned about the bubble breaking. Because every time it goes down, people are buying in because people still think, oh, I could have bought it lower. I'm waiting and I'm going to buy it. So you have these waves that happen. Now, these days, those waves happen within hours. Particularly when it comes to cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and all that, it's 24/7 trading. It's at your fingertips. You don't have to call a broker. You just do it. So the cycle has been shortened dramatically here. We see it go from 16,000 down to 12,000. People are like, wait a minute, maybe I'm going to jump in at this point. Not really knowing what's going on. A lot of the retail that are doing this from their various smartphones and their apps just buying because they look at price. Oh, it's down, I'm buying it. Now, that may work out for a while. No question about that. But there's going to be cracks that are forming that you need to pay attention to, like when you see a drop of 30% overnight. Now, in the crypto world, maybe that's not a lot. But you know what? With all the people that are investing in the market cap of these various coins, it is. And when you start seeing those drops, what's the first thing that's going to happen again? Initially, the first few drops, people are just going to buy in. Now you have even more money at risk. Now you can see strange things at the next part of this, which we started to see just recently, which companies are changing their name or their business models to get on board. Crazy moves continue. I mean, you see 2, 3, 400% move on some of the stocks in some of these names until one day, it's kind of like musical chairs. The music stops. Everybody wants to get out for whatever reason. I don't know what happens. Maybe there's regulation. Maybe there's a scare by maybe a hack in this case. Maybe some of the underlying fundamentals are looked at very carefully and realize that, there's not much there. Like we saw in the internet stocks of 2000 as an example. Great. By the way, that is a great comparison tool to what's happening now in the cryptos. Now, whether you want to say, oh, Ethereum is the one, is it going to be the best? I'm talking about all the others that are out there. Think about all the companies that remained in business after the 2000 crash when the dot-com bubble blew. Probably the same thing's going to happen here with a lot of the companies that just changed their names, as well as a lot of the altcoins that really have no sense of and no reality in business and nothing really there other than speculative interest. So bubbles grow slowly. They move and get much larger, much quicker than expected. They last a lot longer than anyone thinks. And then when they pop, it's pretty ugly. Now, again, I mentioned this at the beginning. There's opportunities. There's plenty of opportunities. When you see these things coming down, and if there still is a market for them, there is inefficiencies in the market due to the fact that people are trading these things on market orders and not really looking at the pricing. So they're buying and selling on emotions, in, out, in, out. Therefore, what happens is if you could figure out a way to buy on some of the emotional drops, there may be a real significant benefit for you. But understand something. And when you go into this, understand this, that we are in a very highly valued circumstance and a very energy-charged environment when it comes to much of this. And if you really do think about the lessons we learned from 2000, et cetera, there's a lot of the components of what happened there to what's happening now in this recent craze. It is a craze. It is an obsession. It is euphoric. Is the bubble ending? I don't know. There's plenty of ways to profit on the inside of it, though. That I can tell you. With that, let's get to our guest and see what he has to say. And our guest today, the last guest actually of the year, is Ben Hunt. He's a chief investment strategist at Salient, and he also is the writer of an author of Epsilon Theory, which is a newsletter and website that examines markets through the eyes and lens of game theory as well as history. So we've had him on before. Always a great guest. Ben, how are you? Happy New Year.
Well, thanks. Great to be here. Appreciate you having me back on. Always a pleasure.
Well, yeah, great. I mean, every time I speak, to be honest with you, every time I speak with you, my head for like a half hour, I have to kind of like get myself back into, wow, that was just mind-blowing information or really good stuff. So let's talk a little bit about, oh, by the way, I was thinking, somehow I should put the word blockchain in my podcast.
No doubt. I think you'd get a sharp boost in listenership, for sure.
Anything blockchain or crypto, something or other, seems to just be attracting everybody by droves. Crazy. Let's talk about, which goes into some of the discussion about this whole common knowledge game and behavioral finance.
Well, it sure does. Right? I'm glad you brought that up. It absolutely plays into it. And, you know, I'd love to come back to that as we discuss it.
So, well, let's talk about, you have so many interesting writings. Recently, the one from, this was October, Epsilon Theory. No mm-hmm. turn the field, clever hands. And you start out with this whole discussion on breaking a horse.
Yeah.
And this whole idea of I think the idea was one of the ways you get a horse to like you is not really, you try to ignore it.
Well, that's right. It's this concept. And I had no idea that this word existed or what it was, but it's called negging. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'll be very familiar to anyone who's in middle school or high school, and I learned about it from my daughters, because, you know, I'm a dilettante farmer up here in the wilds of Connecticut, as I like to call it. But, you know, we've got enough space in a barn. We keep a couple of horses. But what we also do is that we adopt a Mustang from the Bureau of Land Management. You know, there are tens of thousands of wild horses roaming out west, mostly in Nevada, Utah, places like that. They're characterized actually as an invasive species, you know, because they were introduced by the conquistadors all those centuries ago. But they've got a pretty tough life out there, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. just because they're living on the federal lands. They're no predators, so they. You know, overpopulation and lack of resources is a pretty tough gig for them. So what the Bureau does is they round up, you know, a couple of thousand Mustangs every year and then put them on trains and ship them back east for people like us to adopt. And it's a wonderful program, but it really does involve now breaking a wild horse. And so this was the project that my 15-year-old wanted to take on. And she was the one who told me about this concept of negging. Because the way you break a horse is not, as you might see in the, you know, the movies, where you toss a saddle on that bucking bronco and you, you know, force the horse to accept your will. No, that's not it at all. The way you most effectively break a horse is that you sit down in the paddock, you know, the little ringed enclosure with the wild horse, and you sit there and you ignore it. You turn your back to the horse. And what people have to understand is that horses are social animals. You know, they live in herds and packs. And so that horse, that wild horse, will become so curious that it will make the first move to try to get to know you. And as it comes closer, you just ignore it even more. You turn your back to it until ultimately that horse will come up and allow you to touch it because it's so darn curious about who you are. And it wants to communicate with you so bad that it will give itself to you, that it will allow the human to control the horse. Now, this concept of negging, it comes from kind of middle school and high school because apparently, and again, I didn't know this, the way you express your interest, that you're a boy in ninth grade and you want to get a girl to pay attention to you, you don't come up and tell her how pretty you are. You give her a backhanded, you know, more than a backhanded compliment, something like, oh, you'd be pretty if you cut your hair. Mm. Or, your friend sure is cute. You know, it's these negative comments, negging that you're using to supposedly get the true object of your attention to make that move and to like the horse, you know, come up and show the interest directly. So it really got me thinking that there's so much about our social lives, especially the way that social media works, that's very similar to negging, meaning that we are trained, as horses are trained, to follow what I'll call is the nudge, and we'll get to that in a second. The nudge of business, of government, and we don't. It's not because they're forcing us to do something, right? Mm-hmm. It's because we do it willingly. It's because we're so desperate to have this interaction, this communication, to this participation, that we give up our freedoms willingly, in the same way that horses do, and I suppose, you know, 8th and 9th grade girls do too. So that's the origin of this concept of negging and how we are trained, not through force but through our own volition.
But this obviously has to tie into so you invite everybody but this one, you know, gal or guy to a party, and they're like, hey, what's the matter with me? Yeah. What's going on? And you know, and then you do that a couple times, then you're like, I didn't think you'd want to come. And then they're like, oh yeah, of course I'd want to come to your party.
Exactly.
How does this negging then, I guess it gets supercharged with FOMO.
Well, that's right. And this gets to your comments about crypto and the like, and there's so many variations on this theme, right? And one of the most, but it's all of a type. And what I mean by it all being of a type is that no one is forcing you. Nobody's holding a gun to your head and saying, "Oh, you need to, buy crypto, buy a Bitcoin or Litecoin or whatever or what have you." And when it comes to government, what they found is that it's much more effective to get you to support a certain policy, not by forcing you to do something, right? But by arguing that this is what. You know, this is what all the cool kids are doing, right?
Yeah.
You know, this is what the smart people are doing. You know, what you don't agree with, the ACA. You don't agree with Obamacare. Well, goodness, you must not be very smart, right? And that's the argument, right? So, you don't like the new tax bill. Well, my goodness, don't you know that, you know, 100% of trained economists think that this is a bad idea? Well, you don't agree with them?
Right.
You see what I mean? That's the equivalent of negging
negging with a groupthink push.
That's exactly right.
It's trying to embed embedding in a groupthink, and then you have the you know what the groupthink is, and then you have the FOMO, which is additionally to this, which is then, oh, wait a minute. If I don't do this, if I don't, you know, and now we're talking about investing for a second. If I don't do this, what am I going to miss out on everybody else? Let me tell you something real quickly. I was kidding around when I talked to you, before about, I'm just going to put the word blockchain or crypto something in my podcast. And I bet I think the top, however many in the top 20 podcasts right now out there, which is a lot of podcasts, but top 20 business is like all crypto. Crypto,
oh,
this, crypto,
no
that.
Doubt.
It's crazy.
There's so, no doubt.
And then we see stocks that are going up, 10, 15 fold in a day or so, just because they said we're thinking about it. You know, they're smelling around the idea of blockchain, which I was out with a bunch of very smart fellows that are involved in the investment world, some private equity and all. And one of them said to me last night, "What the hell is this blockchain?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Well, it's this and that." And they're like, "Well, that's good, but what can you use it for?" I'm like, well, it's kind of in its infancy state, and it may be this, and it may have transacted. And I went through this kind of discussion with him very briefly. He's like, oh, so it's not really there yet. I'm like, well, not really. So what are these companies saying they're doing? I said, well, they're thinking about it. They're looking at it. But when it comes
let me tell you, what's so unusual is that your friend there was, I think, I'll say, brave enough to say, well, what is this?
Right.
To ask that question, because this is the way that negging works, because it's designed to work on people, which, I'm part of this. We're all none of us are immune to this. Right. When they say, well, you don't know what blockchain is. What are you stupid?
Right.
I mean,
everybody knows.
You, Everybody knows what blockchain is. Come on. That's exactly how all this works.
Yeah.
That's exactly how this works. And it's an incredibly powerful goad, an incredibly powerful spur to human behavior. And once you start looking for it, you see it everywhere, right? You see it everywhere in advertisements. You see it everywhere in, you know, our daily lives. You see it everywhere, certainly in politics and markets. It's this notion of, oh, well, you didn't buy Bitcoin, you know, a year ago. What? Oh, you're not very smart, are you? Right. That's how it works.
So,
and it's incredibly
effective. We use this now? How do we understand? See, I'm always looking for the next part of the discussion, which is, okay, I get how this exists. I understand that. You know, I could see that this is something. How then do we use that as individuals and understand? Because it's very tough to identify
that this is happening. So it's, I think there are really two important things. I'll talk about the first and the primary most important aspect of this. And it comes from this old saying from poker, right? Where if you've been playing poker for 30 minutes and you don't know who the sucker is at the table, it's you,
right?
right?
Yep.
Right?
Uh-huh. It's you. Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I mean by that is the relevance of that is that I'm not saying to fight the Fed because, you know, the Federal Reserve and the press conferences and all like this is all part of this negging stuff, right? It's all part of these using our words to influence your behavior. Here's what I'm not saying. I'm not saying to fight the Fed, right? I'm not saying to fight against the forces in the world, and they're everywhere, that are trying to get us to behave in a certain way. I'm not saying to fight that. What I'm saying, though, is to realize that you are being intentionally shunted or moved in this direction, right? Because that's the only protection we really have. Because at some point, the message, the shunting, the influence is going to change. It's going to go in a different direction to leave all of us as investors essentially holding the bag, right? And if you believe this stuff in your heart of hearts, if you are the sucker at the table, that's when you get taken, right? So I really think the most important thing here is just to understand that this is a game being played, to understand that even though I go along with it, it's not because I believe it in my heart of hearts, right? It's because it's in my own self-interest to go along with it for now.
Right. So that's interesting because a lot of people like, for example, let's just go. It's so timely, so we have to discuss it, even though I'm disgusted by discussing it already.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Bitcoin thing, you know, the whole idea of everybody knows that a lot of this is built on nothing. If there was a word less than nothing, I would say that would be what was built on. Okay. So I'm not saying that Bitcoin's bad. I'm not saying Ethereum. I'm not saying that, but a lot of the underpinnings of this and the price movement has been a incredible amount of speculation, and it's been, you know, worked out for a lot of people over time, and it's fine. But there's a lot of people that say, I'll never do that because it's not good. But meanwhile, for those that would have maybe got involved in it, even though they know the bottom line of this is that there's going to be a major correction in XYZ one day, they at least wrote it to some point.
Yeah.
You know, and said, at least I'll take a little piece of this and I'll play with it to my particular level of risk that I'm comfortable with. You want to take 5,000, 10,000, 50,000, whatever your level is. And then at least you can get involved. But I'll tell you something, you know, when do you know when things start getting a little bit too hot? It's when people that you never thought in the world would start talking about this, when they finally got to the point that they're listening to all these other conversations around them, they've been negged, and they're at a point.
Yes.
I had just yesterday or the day before somebody call me and say, oh, I want to buy Ethereum. I'm like, oh. And just to underscore this, they wanted me to buy it for them in their account. And I'm like, well, I this is how much they didn't know about it. I can't buy that in a traditional brokerage account. Oh.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, you have to buy it on one of these other places. And this is how you do it. He goes, well, can you help me with that? So I helped him through the process and he wanted to buy a few $1,000 worth of a coin. And so I said, okay, fine, we'll do that. But now I'm thinking, wow, you know, was that one of the last guys that was finally gotten to a point that it's time to think about maybe this is going to subside a little bit, you know, because he's risk averse.
Well, I you're exactly right. And I tell you what we're seeing in our wealth management business at Salient is that we're getting inbound calls from the families who we represent, and they're asking, well, shouldn't we do something with these cryptocurrencies because it diversifies our portfolio? Right? And the answer to that is no. This is not a diversifier. Right? And so let's think of, and it's in the name, a cryptocurrency as a currency. Right? There are only three reasons to own a currency. Right? You own a currency because it's going to facilitate some future transaction. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to want to spend it, right? You own it. There are some currencies that have a carry, right, that you can actually get interest from, essentially, right? That have but that doesn't apply to any of these cryptocurrencies. There's no carry associated with it. Or you do it for speculation, right? And that's not a bad word. I mean, we're all speculators in some aspect of our life, but you have to. It's not a diversifier because it doesn't have a positive expected return. Right. And so it is a tool for, like I say, either carry, which doesn't exist here, for facilitating a future transaction, which nobody's buying it for. Right. You're not doing it because, mm-hmm. I can only transact in Bitcoin or Litecoin.
Right.
You're doing it as speculation. And that's fine. But know that that's what you're doing. Right. Own it. You have to own it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
That's what you're doing.
That, I mean, it's the equivalent of somebody calling up and, you know, saying, hey, I would like to buy. You know, I'd like to buy in our portfolio for diversification. I would like to buy some defaulted bonds, for example. You know, like, okay, well, how does that exactly work in this whole thing? I think it's going to be a great opportunity and it will come back, and or I'd like to buy some, you know, penny stock or something even that's related.
Yeah.
That's fine, but let's not cover this up and make it look like something it's not. Like,
that's,
I always
right.
say, putting a chocolate icing on top of a pile of dog shit. It may look good on the outside, but when you bite into it, it's not the most pleasant experience.
Exactly right. And I, just one last comment kind of about the crypto craze. And to our point earlier about when the message changes, who gets left holding the bag? You know, I noticed today the founder, the guy who started Litecoin, they were interviewing him on CNBC or something. And he said, well, you know, I've sold all of my Litecoins.
Right. And that was pretty amazing. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing.
You would think,
right?
You'd hold like a 10% position or something in there.
Yeah, there's no one who is more of an insider for that currency than this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's telling you says, hey, it's gone up, you know, whatever, thousands of percent. So, look, I'm out. And that's the hard part. That's what I think a lot of people who have, you know, opened up a Coinbase account or something like that to, again, be a dilettante or to dabble in this. These things, when they get to this stage, they absolutely become roach motels, meaning that you can get in, you can buy it, but it's very hard to get out. It's very hard to sell it. So, you know, that's the word to the wise out there, or for what I've got. If you want to do it, that's great, but recognize, you know, why you're doing it, and it should have that proportional size in your portfolio. When you're doing it for these purposes.
Yeah. Let's switch over to the idea of fresh eggs.
Okay, sure.
Fresh eggs. You know, you wrote a piece, it was actually kind of, I thought it was interesting about this homeschooling idea and, you know, the whole idea of, I guess, teaching and training and the educational process and, the whole idea of, you know, going through the motions versus learning. You know, really, I guess.
Well, and it's connected with that whole negging idea, right? That once you kind of see how we are being trained in all sorts of ways to adopt certain behaviors, it really does open your eyes. What I'll tell you is that public education is one of those things that we've been trained to accept. This is nothing against public. I pay a lot of taxes for public education. Mm-hmm. Yep. I love public education. I would pay more. Don't tell anyone, but I probably will.
Yeah, you will.
Exactly. But this is not against public education, right? My point is that the institutions that have been built up, necessarily so, to support a system of public education, the system, the institutions, the processes, the procedures, everything from the curriculum to the bus schedule to the calendar of school events, all of that is there not for the benefit of the child, but in order that you can have this industrially sized exercise of public education.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, mm-hmm. and I, you know, made the comparison to eggs. I know this sounds a little weird, but it's also connected with you know, life on my quote unquote farm up here, because we have chickens and we have fresh eggs. You know, fresh eggs, they don't look like the eggs you get in the supermarket.
Yeah, all nice, right? And they're white, not, sitting up in a nice box.
That's right. They're not perfectly clean, for one thing. You don't want to scrub and wash a fresh egg. You really don't. They're not refrigerated. You don't have to refrigerate a fresh egg. In fact, you don't want to refrigerate a fresh egg. You just keep it out on your counter there. But we've been trained to believe that the proper egg, the good egg, is like the eggs we get in the supermarket, which is, say, they are spotlessly cleaned, they're scrubbed, and they're refrigerated. Now, that's not necessary to wash them like that and to refrigerate them. It's not necessary to have a good egg. In fact, my fresh eggs, which are not refrigerated and aren't, I call it, they're fingernail clean. They're not spotlessly clean. They're mm-hmm. fingernail clean. Mm-hmm. My eggs are better than the eggs you get in the supermarket. But when I give eggs away and they're only fingernail clean and they're not refrigerated, people think, oh, well, are these eggs still good? Right? Are they? And the truth is they're better.
Spoiled.
But we've
spoiled
been trained
eggs.
To believe that these other eggs, the supermarket eggs, are the good eggs. Why? Because it is industrially necessary. To have an egg factory, you have to scrub them, right? Because there are horrible diseases that live in these places. You have to refrigerate them because they won't keep in the high temperatures that you get in the storage and the transportation facilities. Mm-hmm. So the reason we have scrubbed, clean, and refrigerated eggs is not because that makes for a better egg.
Right.
You know, on the contrary, it's there because it's necessary to do this at industrial scale. And once you start thinking about that, you think, well, that's the same for our school system. That's the same for our healthcare system. It's the same for our political system. All of these things that we take as natural and that we just accept as a course of nature are not there because it's good for us. It's there because it's good for an industrially sized system.
Well, it's good. It's good to keep everything easily flowing. That's the point about the industrial sized system. You know,
whereas
you have a school and everybody knows, okay, this person went to this school. Here are his grades. Here are her classes.
Yep.
Here are his or her specialties and direction. And okay, now that cog can fit into this college's curriculum according to that. And therefore it makes the process all that much more easy. Now, on the other hand, what happens when all of a sudden there is, there is this homeschooled situation where somebody or alternative education, we'll call it that. All of a sudden it doesn't fit into that entire process. And now you need to all of a sudden, it's a customization. You know, it's like portfolio management. If you customize every single portfolio versus having some models, for example, on some, which could be customized as well, it makes the process much more difficult. Or when you have a home builder that is doing cookie cutter homes versus custom homes, you could do 50 times more custom cookie cutter homes than you can the custom homes. So it's all this process, I guess, of just everybody towing the line and everybody.
You're totally right. But here's what's changed just over the last 20 or 30 years. And it is a concept. I know this sounds like an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms, but it's really how technology has changed our lives. And that's the concept of mass customization. Mass customization.
Yeah, restaurants.
So, well, that's right. So it's you see it in everywhere. You see it in Amazon, right? Where mm-hmm. you know it's a mass distribution of everything, and yet because the technology is there to see your preferences and what you've purchased in the past, it can be customized to you, right? In what you see and kind of and how it helps you find something. It's true in education. It's homeschooling today is very different than it was 20 or even 30 years ago, because with technology, you now have enormous resources in terms of curricula, in terms of preparing your children so that they can fit into the admissions program so they can have a college preparatory curriculum that fits in every college in the country, every mm-hmm. university in the country. It really is this the change, and I think it's an amazing change that's come through the use of technology in all these different fields, right? Whether it is the home building, right, where you can't actually still get the benefit of mass production, but it doesn't have to be as cookie cutter as it was before. You can have templates. The templates then be cut. Yeah, again, I'm using kind of finger quotes here. Customize for certain preferences on this or that, so that it gives you this goal that's been out there for a long time of mass customization, where you get the efficiencies of mass production, which technology can provide, with the benefits of having it tailored, more bespoke product for what's right for your children, your home, your purchasing patterns, whatever you want to say.
But this leads into homogenization.
By the way, another great example of mass customization are robo-advisors.
Yeah. I mean, there's some benefit to them.
That's what robo-advisors are trying to do. They're trying to provide mass customization. So it's mass, right? They're trying to get the advantages of scale where you're working off a technology platform, but they're trying to customize it. And typically, it's a pretty thin veneer of customization. If you want to know the truth, you know. But that's the goal with the whole robo advisor approach. And you're right. It's an homogenization. It can often be more of a veneer than the truth. And you lose a lot when you don't have that direct human analysis or advice.
And let's kind of go one step further. This is the whole one of the reasons, or part of the reason that. You see the, let me just say one thing first. People are willing to eat in like a Panera Bread and say it's good. mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a bit of a food snob. So, or eat in any of these fast casuals and be happy yep. with the output, which is the equivalent, by the way, of, to a degree, why we saw the incredible growth of indexed ETFs, because it's all become just one pattern transaction. And why bother with any of the other stuff? It's just much easier to get the fast food version of the portfolio. And since it's done well over the years, and you know, you see that there's active management has, you know, ups and down years. And of course, index and passive is comparing to the index, which, by the way, is a little bit crazy. That's trying to, I look in the mirror and I like say, oh, I look good to myself as compared to myself. You know, I mean, like, well, what are you comparing this?
Andrew, what do you mean? You don't believe in index, S&P 500 for everything and for all of it? What are you stupid, Andrew? I mean, right. don't you understand right. that this is low cost? What yep. what are you for high cost?
Yep.
I mean, what? Huh?
Yep. No, the ultimate neg. The ultimate neg.
Back on all of our conversations here, Andrea, and your point's exactly right. And where it feeds on itself is in this other concept that I write about, which is the crowd watching the crowd. So that there is this that the more that people see other people and have what we call it in game theory, the missionary up there saying this is what you should do. It really does create this feedback loop that accelerates the whole process, where you are then perceived as being stupid, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't participate in that practice, right? And that's that's that fear of missing out. That's the, oh, you don't understand what blockchain is, or oh, you're not just putting all your money into index funds. What are you? You're really behind the times here, you know.
It reminds me of It reminds me back in 2000, a couple different times over history. Back in the 90s, there was a couple of times when this happened, in 2000-ish to 2002, 2007, yep. where people were okay being down on their portfolio, for example. You know why? Because everybody else is down. Everybody's down.
Yep.
Everybody's down. So you know what? I'm not upset. Like, oh, okay. That sounds like a real winning proposition. You know, and at the same time, you know, the incredible amount of people just watching the S&P or the Dow and expecting that's what everything should be, especially as times are good. And just let me just move on for a second here. There's a couple of things I just want to cover before we go. Yep. Some suggestions you have on kind of how to understand a little bit more about what's happening and whether I have free choice and whether I'm, you know, what my mind is saying, what I'm doing. And you say, you know, first of all, actively engage to recognize that many behavioral choices within investing in politics aren't a free choice at all. We talked about that. You know, we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. The whole idea that we're swimming along and going along with it. We may not even know it. Create a critical thinking curriculum that adds to your free thinking autonomy, which is things like what not to do. Watch less TV, CNBC, CNN, Fox. One of the things that I'm having a lot of trouble with lately is I used to be able to read various news pieces and articles from various sources and feel that I got a really robust understanding and a mm-hmm. clearly balanced discussion of whatever it is. Somebody sent me today an article from the Washington Post about who are the winners and losers and who is going to be affected by the upcoming potential passage of this tax bill. And the first thing I did was, okay, where is this from? And are they really hardcore left, hardcore right? Or do I think they're neutral? And how do I then read the article?
Yep. We've had to put this entire additional layer on top of our reading and our understanding so that we're now not just taking it for what is being written, but now we have to ask, why is it being written? Who is it being written by? And it's poisonous. It really is. But it's also absolutely necessary. I just want to get back to that, you know, one of the first comments we said, you know, the whole idea here about developing critical thinking and the like is to ask the question, why? Why is this information being presented to me now and through this venue? To not take things at face value, to not be the sucker at the table. And ultimately, that's what I'm writing about and what I'm trying to, you know, accomplish in what I do here, is to continue to encourage people to think for themselves. That's all critical thinking means. It means thinking for yourself, being brave enough to say, I don't understand that, or I don't know why that makes sense, as opposed to you know, going along with the flow just for the sake of going along with the flow. It's not saying you might not want to participate in whatever the flow is. It's not saying you don't want to buy Bitcoin or do this or do that or buy an index fund. I'm not saying don't do that. What I'm saying, though, is to make that choice on your own 2 feet and to not be the sucker at the table.
Yep, I hear you. Well, Ben, that's going to wrap it up. Ben Hunt, Chief Investment Strategist at Salient, and of course, the wonderful writer. If you haven't read, by the way, if you haven't read any of his work regarding the common knowledge game and all this, there's a lot of movies that you reference, a lot of historical information, and put some crazy little pictures in here too on some of these here that describe some of this. And you got to check this out. There was the Notes from the Field, Clever Hands. That was October, and Harvey Weinstein and the Common Knowledge Game back November 10th and all that. You can get some free copies of that over on the site. We'll put the link to Get Epsilon Theory, as well as you can follow Ben. What's your Twitter handle?
At Epsilon Theory.
At Epsilon
Theory. Keeping it simple.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Have a great holiday, and I'll talk to you next year.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Great to be here.
And that's going to put a wrap on this episode. Next week, we'll have a best of 2017, some great clips we put together throughout the year of some of the shows that we did with some of the guests, some of the comments, some of the crazier comments, some of the interesting predictions, And I think you really enjoy that into the end of the year. I want to thank you again. Make sure to do a podcast review over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com for me. I'd really appreciate that. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged each and every week. We'll be there this Tuesday night coming up at 9 p.m. You can find, of course, on iTunes or any of the other podcast networks that have some of the finer podcasts out there. So anyway, again, thanks for joining us. And I really appreciate it. Have a great holiday. I'll see you next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.